This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Guns have long been a part of New Hampshire's culture of hunting and self-reliance, and even those less enthusiastic about guns here tend to emphasize their support for the Second Amendment. Still, New Hampshire has often waded into gun debates, and the big questions often are where firearms should be permitted, who should be allowed to have them, and how they can be worn in public. This year, bills related to these topics have been under review in the legislature, and so today in The Exchange, we look at gun rights and restrictions. It's part of NPR and NHPR's effort to look at the first 100 days of the White House and the State House. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests in studio this morning. Andrew Shigori is here, Tufton Borough Police Chief, first Vice President with the New Hampshire Association of Chiefs of Police. And Chief Shigori, good to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Bob Clegg, president of Pro-Gun New Hampshire and a former state senator. And Bob, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Thank you for inviting me.
And also with us, Republican Representative J.R. Hull of Dunbarton, corporate secretary of the New Hampshire Firearms Coalition. And Representative Hull, thanks for taking time out.
Good morning.
And also with us, Democratic Representative Rennie Cushing of Hampton. He serves on the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. And Representative Cushing, welcome to you, too. Thank you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, Avi, before we get into any details about the bills that got passed and the bills that got killed, I want to just get your thoughts on guns as a political issue. And I'm going to start with you, Bob Clegg. Was there a time when guns were not so much a political issue, that here in New Hampshire, they were part of some people's lives, but not so much part of the political discussion?
Okay, well, that's an unfair question because now I'm going to show my age. when I was a kid, it was nothing to go to school with a shotgun in your car because you went bird hunting before you went to school, and you had every intention of going bird hunting when you left school. They were hanging in your pickup trucks. They were sitting in your back seats. It wasn't an issue for anybody. At that time, it was just an accepted part of life. But I will also say that it was nothing unusual because your father taught you how to use one, or in some cases, even your mother. So it wasn't always a scary thing. It used to be just a part of our life.
So what changed and when?
I could say the migration from Massachusetts, but I think it's just that some people decided not to, to take on the culture of the state of New Hampshire and just decided that let's make it a big scary thing. Don't forget, it's a big moneymaker.
What's a big moneymaker?
Being afraid of guns. The state will tell you they make $1 million a year off of people who apply for licenses.
I want to get everybody's thoughts on this, and I love your sort of look back at how the culture has changed. Rennie Cushing, what do you think? Have guns always been a political issue, or more so in recent years?
I may be like Bob in showing my age, but I tend to agree that I don't think it was a controversial issue, at least when I was growing up in New Hampshire. But I think the issue is not guns as much as gun violence and gun violence prevention. I think that we've seen kind of as changes in technology have come about and changes somewhat in our culture and society, I think we saw an escalation of gun violence in different settings and different circumstances. And certainly I would agree that in the past, 10 or 15 years, it's become a very hot button political debate in the state of New Hampshire and nationally. And I think, unfortunately, because it's become such a polarized debate, it becomes difficult sometimes for people to find common ground or to even have a conversation. One of the things I appreciate about being here with Bob and JR is, though we may have different perspectives on gun violence prevention, we're able to sit down and try to talk about things and try to find that common ground.
Well, and you anticipate my next question, which will be about common ground. But Representative Cushing, so the guns went from just a part of life to a hot political topic, as you said. Why?
I mean, I think it's complicated. I don't think it's just because people have moved here from other places. I think as a society as a whole, we've become, in many ways, there's been a lot more interpersonal violence that takes place. I think people, on one hand, are afraid of being victims of violence, and you know, and take steps accordingly to try to figure out how to respond or anticipate.
So an increase in guns being misused, mass shootings and
mass
domestic
shootings.
Violence
and
so
I,
forth.
I think, you know, the proliferation of guns. I think there's a difference between our traditional gun culture, which is represents, you know, notions of hunting and self-defense, and thinking that everybody, you know, should be able to have a military assault weapon, which is not really a defensive mechanism, but it's something that people, some people objectively would look at and say that this is really, this is, the sole purpose of this is to be, is to kill people.
So your turn, Chief Shigori, what do you think? What changes have you seen? Well, just sort of how we approach this issue.
I may not be as old as Senator Clegg, but I do know, I remember kids going to school, high school, for hunting and have their guns with them. But I don't think it was, an influx from other states necessarily. It became a national law. So it became a national concern of guns at schools. And so it's, and it going back into the 90s, we had the assault weapon ban, sort of, and on. So I don't think it was just a change in New Hampshire. It was a change culturally across the country. But we also, I think it's a change of culture. We're not as especially in New Hampshire, as agrarian as we used to be. People aren't used to, you know, having to take care of their own food. So they're not necessarily, it's one thing to go to the supermarket, but then you think about the cow. I mean, in hunting culture is not as big. Hunting licenses are going down. The number of hunters are going down. So it's a change in culture, but it's not just here. It's nationwide.
So people aren't as used to having them as part of their daily lives because fewer people are hunting. And yet 270 million or so guns in the U.S. So even though we're less rural and less likely to hunt, we seem to have more guns.
I think, yes, we have a lot of guns, but there's a question of the dispersion of those, too. I mean, some people may buy a bunch. Some people may not buy any. And I think maybe, I guess my point about the hunting, there's less hunters, but there's still maybe more people buying guns for self-defense or other purposes, target shooting, whatever. And not, so the needs maybe have changed with our culture.
Yeah. What do you think, Representative Hull?
I want to weigh in on the change more recently, right?
Sure.
We've seen a large increase in the number of women who are pursuing getting training, carrying firearms for self-protection, just because society as a whole has shifted and in general is a little bit more violent. So they're worried about going shopping late at night at the grocery store, and they have to walk from the grocery store to their car, and the parking lot's not well lit. So we've seen a huge increase both in terms of the number of women who are applying for licenses as well as the number of women who carry on a daily basis. And I think that's an important element. This is the only way to give them a fighting chance if they're being stalked or attacked.
So what do you think about the broader issue that I started off with? You know, Bob Clegg talking about how the big changes he's seen used to be part of daily life. You'd bring one to school. Now people would say, oh, my goodness. What changes have you seen, Representative Hull, in terms of guns going from a part of life to a very difficult part of political conversations?
I think there's an element where people are very fearful. That's still part of society. But there are families, a lot of them, in fact, that teach their kids to be responsible with firearms. And we've, although it's still in the statutes, we've taken any firearms training out of the schools, right? We don't teach kids how to handle firearms correctly, even though that's been part of our laws for a number of years. And it's important that kids get that training. The NRA has a program, the Eagle Eddie program. There are other programs that are similar in nature. Kids need to understand what a firearm is and how to treat it with respect.
I want to let our listeners join us, and then a lot more to talk about. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, gun rights, gun restrictions. New Hampshire lawmakers have been debating a number of gun-related bills this year, looking at where firearms should be permitted, who should be allowed to have them, how they can be worn in public. So we're looking at all that and the bigger issues that these bills raise. Again, let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. And Representative Cushing, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to respond to something that JR talked about, and that's, you know, women and firearms. In New Hampshire, over half the homicides and 90% of the murder-suicides are related to domestic violence. We know that there are circumstances where, you know, crimes of passion take place involving domestic violence. And one of the things that we try to do in New Hampshire is to make sure that those who are have, you know, demonstrated a propensity toward violence don't get easy access to firearms. I think what, you know, we all recognize that guns don't kill people. People kill people with guns end up killing people. And the questions make what our challenge is to make sure that people who are a threat to others don't have easy access to firearms.
Well, let's dive into that then. Who in New Hampshire, I'll turn to you first, Bob Clegg, who in New Hampshire can have access to a gun and who can't right now? Just give us sort of the big categories there.
Right now, anybody who's not prohibited by state or federal law can have a firearm. If you're prohibited, then you can't. And I'll explain how deeply prohibited goes. If you have a medical marijuana card legitimately issued by the state of New Hampshire, as soon as you picked up that card, you became federally prohibited from owning or possessing a firearm or ammunition.
Because it's a federal illegal drug.
Correct. So the whole idea that we have people who are just getting guns so they can go kill people, if you're intent on committing murder or suicide, gun's probably one of the easiest, but it's not the only. How many opioid problems do we have? To me, every time somebody takes fentanyl, that's an attempt at suicide. So if you take away one, they just find another one. And I also want to point out that there is no way for a normal person to purchase or possess a military firearm. You can't have an military assault rifle. You can have something that looks like it, but it's not the same. Trust me, it's completely different. So that whole idea that you can buy one, you can't, unless you have a federal license. If you have a federal license, then you can buy one, and that's not an easy license to get.
So that's the what. Now, hang on one second. So you want to jump in, Chief Chigori.
I just want to point out you can buy M16s from Vietnam era as long as it's pre-86. They'll cost you a lot of money. You have to pay $200 to the federal government, but that's small change compared to the $20,000 or so you have to pay to buy one.
But you can own a gun with the, I think what people talk about with this is like multiple guns that can fire multiple rounds instead
I'm talking a full M16 from Vietnam era are legal in New Hampshire, and it is possible to do it. You have to go through ATF process, but they are legal, and you do have to pay a $200 tax. But when you're paying $20,000 for a gun, $200 is
probably. Right.
Well, if I may, yes, it's more than just $200. It's $200 and a 4-page form of which your local chief is signing off on the form. You're turning in a set of fingerprints. An ATF Form 4 has to be signed by a law enforcement officer. And it's 4 pages and somewhere between 6 and 9 months worth of time.
Well, stepping back from this whole issue here for a second, I'm still confused or need more information on who can get a gun and who can't. Rennie Cushing.
I just want to respond. You know, part of this is definition. My brother-in-law was killed by an FN-7. Assault pistol, which prior to 2006, prior to the expiration of the assault weapons ban, was illegal to have in the United States. And this was a weapon that's just designed to assassinate people.
So,
and that's my own personal experience for that. So, I will say that respectfully to my colleagues here, the weapons that we have today are not like the old ball and musket that we had other days. We have, machines that are absolutely designed to engage in multiple killings.
And I'm sorry to hear about that loss. I knew the story of your father being murdered. I did not know that story, Representative Cushing, and I'm sorry to hear that. Do you know whether that person legally owned that firearm? Because some people say, hey, criminal's going to get a gun no matter what.
Absolutely, the person did legally own it.
Did legally own it.
Yes.
Yeah. So can we return to who? Because I still need some clarity there. And Representative Hull, who can and can't?
So there is a list of federal prohibitions, okay? Everybody who has committed a felony, for instance, is on that list. There's a number of discrete line items within 18 U.S.C. 922 that talk about if you've done the following. On the form that you fill out to purchase, there's a list of now 13 questions. If you're prohibited from any of these, right, you've been adjudicated by a court as mentally defective. That's the way it's written. That's not the term I would
use.
It's
not your language, sure.
If there is a felony is a great example, right? If you're using illegal drugs, right, those are all prohibitions, and that list is at the federal level. In New Hampshire, if you've committed certain crimes, right, again, you're on a list, and that's under 159.3.
Certain crimes such as?
homicide, right?
Sure.
Domestic violence.
Domestic violence is on there.
You can't have one then. Yeah. Okay. Chief Shigori's over here shaking his head. Who can and can't, Chief Shigori?
Actually, correction. That's not on the state list, domestic violence. That's federal list. And the problem with that is you have to actually drill down and get court records to find out if that person meets the requirements. Mm-hmm. For example, it doesn't count if somebody assaulted their girlfriend. It has to be somebody they cohabitated with or they had a child with or they're married. You also have to find out if they had an opportunity to have an attorney or if they waived having an attorney. It's not just simply domestic violence. It goes beyond that. You actually have to get the court records to find out if somebody is prohibited under that. And I've personally seen a case where they couldn't get the court records, so they couldn't charge somebody. And the other thing is you have to find out if they had an opportunity for a jury trial or waived it. But that's federal. State, you basically have felonies. The state uses the term felonies, and it relates to crimes of violence against persons, damage to property, or drugs. Those are the three. So tax evasion,
not all felonies.
Tax evasion, for example, is not a prohibited felony. So New Hampshire, federally, it's not felony. It's actually any crime where you could have been imprisoned for over a year, which is interesting because you run into some states that have Massachusetts for DWI, it's 30 months you could get imprisoned. So it kind of runs into you got to find out what each state law is in each of these states. And it was when they were convicted. So if it was a 2010 conviction, you got to find out what the penalty was in 2010, not today.
Go ahead, Representative Hole, and then I'm going to go to our listeners. Yeah.
Shigori's right on that, that it is, once you start going past New Hampshire, it is if it was a penalty chargeable with offense more than 1 year. And there are a number of states that have crimes that we would not consider to be violent type crimes that have penalties that exceed a year. DWI is a good example right out of Massachusetts. So you may have someone who was convicted of a DWI in Massachusetts years and years ago, okay, who now is now considered a prohibited person in New Hampshire. And that's not right.
Here's an email from Nell in Bedford. And Nell, thank you. She says, I'm a lifelong resident. The issue isn't, Nell says, gun ownership. It's the encroachment of guns into city public spaces. Nell says, the New Hampshire I grew up in owned guns for hunting. Bob Clegg, what do you think?
Well, I think that part of the reason why we want to have everybody legally be able to carry concealed is that so people like her who feel, nervous about actually seeing a gun don't have to. So by allowing Senate Bill 12 to pass and be signed, now legitimate people who are allowed to actually own or possess a weapon don't have to show it on their hip where people can point at it and go, oh, my God, is he sane, insane? It allows everybody to sort of feel comfortable, including the people that hold the gun. How many people have we seen on TV where the gun showed and some guy tackles them and decides to beat them up and they were legitimate? One was actually an off-duty cop. So,
but they can carry concealed now with a simple permit process.
That's
not
the
true.
Bill that just
That's
passed the legislature and
that,
the governor has yet to sign.
That allows somebody to decide whether or not your voice at town meeting makes you unsuitable. Remember, in 2009, the permit had on the back what was a suitable person, and law enforcement took it off. If that had stayed there, we'd still be okay.
Well, I'm going to let the police chief jump in there. Go ahead, Chief Shigori.
Didn't take it off. The Supreme Court ruled that that was not the criteria. And that was not did not meet the law. Secondly, I keep hearing the story of the person that spoke at town meeting, but I think that's a myth. I've never given that actual case to see. And there is criteria to use.
Well, and after a short break, we should clarify for folks what passed the legislature, how people feel about it, for sure. And then a bunch of emails, phone calls that we'll go to, gentlemen. So hang in there. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Bummed that you haven't heard Outside In for a while? Well, podcast subscribers get fresh episodes every other week. Episodes that answer serious questions like, is there more wind than there used to be?
Not to make light of a serious subject, but I also know that you and your husband hate wind chimes.
Which... Oh, man, I can't, not in my backyard. I hate wind chimes.
We're going to get mail about this, I hope.
Subscribe to Outside In and all of NHPR's podcasts on iTunes or Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the gun debate in New Hampshire. We're looking at some of the big, broad issues that always come up when these bills are presented to the legislature. Where guns should be permitted, who should be allowed to have them, how they can be worn in public. We're looking at all that, and we'd love to hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests here to hash this out. Bob Clegg is with us, president of ProGun New Hampshire, Democratic State Rep. Rennie Cushing of Hampton, Republican Representative J.R. Hole of Dunbarton, and Andrew Shigori, Tufton Borough's police chief. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. So, gentlemen, I definitely want to bring more listeners into this, but I do want to give you, Chief Shigori, and you, Representative Hole, a chance to just flesh out for the public, who may not be following this as closely as we are, just what the rules up until very recently were around people carrying weapons concealed and the role of police chiefs. And go ahead, Chief Shigori, and then Representative Hall.
Well, the law for issuing licenses says it'll either be a mayor of a city, board of selectmen, it'll be or a full-time police officer, or in certain circumstances, it can be the sheriff will issue them. And the criteria
a permit to carry concealed.
To carry concealed,
You can carry open, but
you
to carry concealed,
unloaded, which means you could have the magazine with you, but not in the gun. And also allowed you to carry loaded in vehicles. Even opener concealed in vehicles. As a present law, you have to do that. And the criteria, as found to be constitutional in the Blyler case, Blyler versus Chief Dover Police Department, is suitable person. In the Blyler case,
that's the language. A suitable person.
Suitable person and have a proper purpose. And the proper purpose, there's a few examples given in the law: self-defense, target shooting, hunting. The Blyler case, the man did nothing illegal, but he pulled his gun out, put it on the table, said he was going to at the city attorney's desk. He also had, I believe, had gone around to amongst his neighborhood saying he was going to let Smith & Wesson solve his problems, that sort of thing. And he got his...
So that felt threatening to people.
That people felt that wasn't appropriate. The chief revoked his license. Again, no crime, no... Nothing on the federal suitability or prohibitions. And the Supreme Court in New Hampshire looked at both New Hampshire's constitution and the federal constitution and said, no, this is constitutional. And I think another important thing, when we talked about federal prohibitions, one of the problems is New Hampshire does not report any mental health records. We have two people. National Shooting Sports Federation, which is gun manufacturers, ranked us 49th out of 50 states for reporting. We have two people we've reported, and there's no process for them to get off the list either if they were to restore their mental health.
So that's the background check issue, and I definitely want to
That's a huge gap.
Dig into that.
What we can do with NICS, we run a check on somebody, and I mean, it's easy to say somebody meets the federal requirement because they're not mentally defective, which was the term of art back in 68 when the law was passed, which isn't obviously appropriate now, but there's no way of finding out who that is due to privacy laws in New Hampshire. So we right now can say I've dealt with this person and they're very dangerous and they're in mental distress and they've acted in dangerous ways, and we could deny them a permit to carry concealed. They still could probably get a gun, just like the person in Manchester who shot two police officers. He was held up by the NICS check, but then 72 hours later, if they can't confirm it, they have to allow the sale to go through.
The NICS check, again, being the background system check. So I definitely want to talk about the adjudicated mentally ill. I think that's the exact language. But getting back to the concealed carry debate that we've been listening to in the legislature for the past few weeks, Representative Hole. So Chief Shigori gave his perspective, you know, feeling like he and mayors should have some say over someone who maybe shouldn't carry concealed. And I just wonder what you think about that. The person who says, hey, I'm going to let Smith & Wesson solve my problems.
Well, there's already on the books criminal threatening. So there are things that if I were to say to Representative Cushing, right, I'm going to take you out, whatever, right, there is that crosses the line into criminal threatening. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the lady who in Wyndham, for instance, right, was on a reapplying for a license. She had a license. It was issued by the chief. It had expired, right? It was time to renew. And she was flat out denied. no criminal activity, no speeding tickets. I mean, literally the ideal candidate. And it took her several thousand dollars worth of legal fees and several months to get her license reissued. It wasn't that it wasn't issued. They couldn't deny her. The chief was asking in this case for more information than was on the form, and the law prohibits him. And this particular person stood up and said, no, the law says this is what you're allowed to ask for. This is what I've given you. And that's not the only case. The same day that we were debating Senate Bill 12 in the New Hampshire House, right, a former House rep who had moved out of state, who had applied to for an out-of-state license, was busy suing the state police. The number of denials and or delays is significant, and that's the reason this bill is going forward.
Well, but all of you, I can see you want to jump in, but I've got a full bank of phone lines and lots of emails I want to get through. So hold on to that thought, Representative Cushing, and let's go to Cynthia in Sandwich. Hi, Cynthia. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm a native of New Hampshire. I grew up around guns, and when I was in high school at Kingswood Regional High School in Wolfboro, I'd get on the bus in Moultonboro and take my rifle to school, as we had a rifle club. And I think that, you know, education is a huge thing with anything, and people wouldn't be so afraid of them if we were allowed to have them in a more sporting sense. You don't necessarily have to shoot animals, but shooting at targets was a lot of fun.
Well, Cynthia, thank you for the call. And Representative Clegg, it sounds like the story you told at the beginning of the hour.
Yeah, I didn't have a bus. I had to walk to school. But anyways.
Uphill in the snow both ways. Both ways.
Yeah. 15 miles.
but it's exactly what we were talking about, that in the old days, there was actually programs to teach kids the safety of guns, and you didn't have to worry about them getting hurt.
Well, here's an email from Brian that just came in. And Cynthia, by the way, thank you for that call. Brian says, I'm sorry to say I'm sick and tired of hearing about guns. Every time Republicans are in the majority, all we hear about is guns. Brian says, I grew up with guns, like you, Bob Clegg and Cynthia, our caller. Brian says, I own guns. I grew up hunting. He says, we do not need more guns nor greater access to guns. We do not need, nor are they in any way justified in a civil society, assault weapons on our streets. More guns equals more gun violence and more guns in the hands of criminals. We must ratchet back this obsession with guns and the violence that stems from them. So let's see. I know everybody wants to jump in on this, but maybe you first, Randy Cushing, and then you represent. Sure. We'll go to you first, Representative Hull. This is a concern that you do hear, that, you know, we have more guns. Gun manufacturing is a big business. We've got Sturm Ruger here in New Hampshire. There's a lot of money involved in the gun industry. More guns equals more violence, which then people get scared, and so they buy guns to protect themselves, and it's like a self-perpetuating cycle. I wonder what you think about that.
Well, at the beginning of the
hour, Brian, thank you for the email.
At the beginning of the hour, you mentioned there was 270 million firearms. I actually think the number is closer to north of 300 million. It's close to one per person in the states at this point, right? So it's a mathematical anomaly. You can't just say unless you start taking off out of the streets hundreds of millions of firearms, okay, they're going to be there. So just saying
fewer guns
are going to be less violent, it's a false argument, okay, that we have those firearms out there. It depends on the number of owned by one individual. You may have individuals who have acquired more. I mean, I think Gordy's nodding
yeah.
his head, right? So, but what we are seeing is a greater propensity for people to get training. We see a greater propensity of people to want to protect themselves because society, unfortunately, has devalued life for other reasons, and that has crept into our culture.
So you don't think, like this person, Brian, who's a gun owner, says more guns equals more violence. That's the problem, he says.
I don't see that at all. In fact, I see more people who have taken the steps necessary to protect themselves and their families.
Representative Cushing, go ahead.
I just want to go back to the question of the concealed carry. We took that up for the past few years in the legislature a number of times. But the most interesting testimony I heard came from a fellow representative who used to be the deputy chief in Portsmouth, who talked about someone applied for a concealed carry permit, gave three references, and he called the three references, and all three of the references said, oh, don't give this guy a concealed carry permit. He's really, he's very dangerous. Don't do that. And that was an example of its own individual's references saying, don't do that. It was an example of why you denied a concealed carry permit.
So the argument on the other side, though, Representative Cushing, would be, well, who are these three people to say so. I mean, maybe he's just an outspoken person who, you know, got under other people's skin in town.
They were three people that he suggested would vouch for him as to whether or not he should do. They were his references. So when you go and you check out an individual's references that they give you and they say, don't issue this guy a concealed carry permit. It's dangerous. That's an example of where I thought the law worked.
Well, Bob Clegg, when Governor Hassan vetoed a similar bill a couple years ago to repeal New Hampshire's concealed carry permit system, she said, look, it's worked well for a long time. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I wonder what you think.
But it is broke. And everybody will tell you, oh, geez, we've never been taken to court, or there are very few cases to go to court. But what they don't understand is when a chief denies you and you have to go to court, you need to hire a lawyer. So you're starting somewhere around $5,000 all the way up to $15,000. The lady in Windham is close to the $15,000 mark. Not a lot of people have that kind of money to take from their family just to get the rights that the Constitution says they have. It's not fair, but it's very easy if you don't like somebody to say, I don't think you're suitable, and then laugh because it's going to cost you money.
Okay, so there's another right. I mean, there's Second Amendment right. But the other side would say, Bob Clegg, and I want to know what you think, would say, okay, you've got your right to carry. I've got my right to feel safe in my community. I don't want, if my neighbor is somebody who says, I'll settle my dispute with you over Smith and Wesson, I have a right to feel safe.
But you do. And somebody who does that, criminal threatening comes up. So I think we're fine.
Yeah.
But, there are a whole lot of other rights. So why don't we license free speech? Can you imagine if we got $10 from everybody who marched in Concord the other day? $10 a piece for the right to speak. And if I don't like what you say, I'll turn you in and maybe I can have your right to free speech revoked and then I'll feel better. It's the same thing.
Chief Shigori, let's hear from you.
Well, a couple of things. One, with rights come responsibilities. And we in our New Hampshire Constitution have explained, I believe it's Article 3, that as we become a civilized society, sometimes rights aren't overexpanding into everywhere. When we start talking about this, sometimes I guess it gets so polarizing. People don't see the kind of middle of it. In regards to criminal threatening, that's directly the Blyler case. He did not commit criminal threatening. He made these comments. They looked at whether or not he could be charged for criminal threatening when he put his gun on the table of the city attorney. But it was it's not simple saying, well, that's criminal threatening. No, there's elements of the offense you have to prove before you charge somebody, and that was not criminal threatening. So he did not commit a crime, and so that was how you could do it.
Let's go back to our listeners, and Terry's in Gilmanton. Hi, Terry. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
First, my husband and I are both gun owners for hunting. We don't do that much anymore. He's a retired police officer, and I wish people would just stop and think, do they feel more safe as we loosen up the very few restrictions we have? I know I don't. We had absolutely no concern and appreciate the vetting by our local chief for concealed permits. And I just want to give you an example of something that I know of, which certainly made us feel less safe, was an incident of somebody having a concealed permit, was involved with a 7 to 8 hour SWAT incident, and ended up in an IEA situation. That person's permit was never revoked. I firmly believe that no one is going to be safer having more guns, particularly in congested areas. People with guns that can help in a situation, if this is what the concern is, you need to have situational awareness and training. And that's why we have law enforcement for most of these situations.
Well, Terry, good to hear from you, given that your husband is a former police officer. And I actually have Deb on Facebook who sent us a note, too. She says, police officers are being killed in the line of duty in alarming numbers. We say that blue lives matter. So why are our legislators taking away the concealed carry permit system, which provides some measure of safety for our law enforcement? This is Deb from Northampton on Facebook. Thank you, Deb. And thank you, Terry, also. And go ahead, Representative Hull. I can see you want to jump in.
I was thinking about the prior speaker's comments, and at the end of the day, I think about we shouldn't craft a society around someone's fear, right? this goes to Chief Shigori's comments, that at the end of the day, my ability to protect myself under Article 2, but also under Article 3, is important, okay? I'm not going to give up my right for self-protection under Article 3. That I would not voluntarily give that away unless I gained something that was more valuable in society. And in this case, the vetting process that we have is broken. We've been saying this for a number of years.
Vetting for
license to carry is very broken. Innocent people, typically on renewals, okay, are being denied. And the rate is high enough and the cost is substantial enough that it's creating real problems. We've come to the legislature as gun owners a number of times and said, can we fix this? A couple years ago, I think it was either last year or the year before, we had a bill in to fix the definition of suitable, to define it in such a way that we had a clear and concise standard.
Who's a suitable person to
get a concealed similar to what was on the back of the form for a number of years, over a decade, in fact. And unfortunately, we found resistance in trying to solve that one issue. Looking at this, I think it's clear that the criminal element isn't going to ask for a license anyway, right? If they're going to go commit havoc or crime or violent crime, they're just going to go ahead and do it. They're not going to get permission from their chief. If we look at states like Vermont that has had no license system forever, okay, since they were founded as a state, they're actually safer than we are. Maine put in constitution carry 2 years ago. We haven't seen the quote-unquote blood in the streets that various chiefs. In fact, at the time, the Maine state police stood in support of the bill when it passed through in Maine.
Well, go ahead, Chief Shigori, and then I have a question for you, Randy.
What we're talking about here, though, if you're both – what you talked about is the change in suitable is what's in SB 12. But what we're talking about in SB 12 is not what Maine has. Maine, it's against the law to carry a concealed weapon in a bar, and it's against the law to be intoxicated. It's actually a crime to do those things, and you lose your license if you do those things.
So there are some restrictions.
There's far more restriction in almost every other state than New Hampshire. You can't carry them in schools. You have to submit fingerprints. You have to show training or suitability as to ability. All to get your license, none of that is in SB 12 or in New Hampshire. And not that we advocated any of that, but I'm just saying it's an apples and orange comparison to say what Maine has and what we have.
Well, here's an article from the Bangor Daily News about the new laws in Maine. And it's interesting. I wanted to ask you guys about this anyway. So here we go. They quote a guy here in this article who goes into a gun shop in Maine to get a new gun. He's got a concealed handgun permit. And he says, it's nice to be able to have a gun for protection. I think it's a good thing to some degree. You're not going to stop somebody from getting a gun in the United States. What do you think? This is the argument, Chief Shigori, that, you know, you're not going to stop criminals from getting guns. So why not have better access to a gun for your own protection?
Well, it's not about – I think the argument is criminals are going to break the law anyway. So
right,
why not?
That's the argument.
Well, in my 28 years of law enforcement, I very rarely had that occasion. I've had far more people driving without a valid license, so I guess we should, by that logic, get rid of the driver's licenses too, because they're also interfering with people's rights to travel, and it's the same idea. What I guess you have to ask yourself, what is a law? What is the purpose of a law? Laws are about setting a floor, what a civilized society expect of our citizens as conduct.
It's making your best effort anyway, even if people don't always follow
it. But we expect them to conduct themselves as part of a civilized society. As we became a civilization, we had to set some rules.
All right. I've got an email that I want to share with you after your break. It has to do with people adjudicated mentally ill. That's the language. And their relationship with guns. So we'll follow up in a minute. This is The Exchange.
Bummed that you haven't heard Outside In for a while? Well, podcast subscribers get fresh episodes every other week. Episodes that answer serious questions like, is there more wind than there used to be?
Not to make light of a serious subject, but I also know that you and your husband hate wind chimes.
Which, oh man, I can't, not in my backyard. I hate wind chimes.
We're going to get mail about this, I hope.
Subscribe to Outside In and all of NHPR's podcasts on iTunes or Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, guns. Who should have access, where they should be allowed, and how they should be worn. It's part of NPR and NHPR's effort to look at the first 100 days of the White House and the State House. Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. In the studio, we've got Bob Clegg, president of ProGun New Hampshire, Democratic State Representative Rennie Cushing of Hampton, Republican State Representative J.R. Hole of Dunbarton, and Andrew Shigori, he's Tufton Borough's police chief. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, here's an email from Jeff that in Hillsborough that just came in, who says, I'm a longtime gun owner, supporter of the Second Amendment, and I have a permit to carry concealed. I would like to see something done nationally about people who most definitely do have psychiatric problems from being able to buy a gun. Cho at Virginia Tech legally bought the weapon he used to kill all those people, yet he was reported multiple times in the weeks prior to be hearing voices and yelling at voices no one else could hear. In the Colorado theater shooting, James Holmes was able to buy a weapon and carry out the shooting, even though his own psychiatrist took the extraordinary step of going to the police and warning them. Jeffrey says, I find it absurd that the attack could not be stopped. People who hear voices should not be allowed to buy a gun. We've had enough discussion nationally about this, Jeffrey says. It's time to try something new. Jeff, thank you so much for the email. And we should talk about this, folks, the idea of who's adjudicated mentally ill, who's hearing voices, and, you know, their colleagues think they shouldn't have a gun, but they get one anyway. Love to hear from you first, Bob Clegg.
And thanks. You know, and this relates directly to the person who bought that gun and shot two police officers in Manchester, because in the state of New Hampshire, we have a New Hampshire gun line. You can't buy a pistol without going through the New Hampshire gun line. And the reason for that has always been that we want to make sure that the person who got arrested last night for domestic violence doesn't have the ability to go buy a gun.
So what is the gun line?
The gun line is instead of going through the federal government directly, you go through the state police department, and they have access to court records. As I said, they can tell if last night you were arrested for domestic violence. And they look through not only through NICS, but they also look through what's happened in the state of New Hampshire.
NICS is the federal background check.
NICS is the national.
Which New Hampshire does not submit names of people with mental problems.
We don't. However, we have the ability to see. In fact, in the case of the fellow who shot the two police officers, he had been adjudicated mentally unfit and mentally ill.
So how did he get that gun?
Because the system failed. Rather than actually do the check, it came in and they left it. Because the person who used to run that unit actually stated publicly that he may miss the 72 hours, but they always go and continue to investigate, and they've had cases supposedly where they went and got a return on the gun. In this case, that person waited 13 days before he went and picked that gun up. He never should have been allowed to have it. All the records were available. Now, the person who used to run the gun line no longer runs it, and there's a new fella that runs the gun line who I have great respect for. I've met with him, and I think you're going to see a bigger change. I think you're going to see the fact that somebody who's not supposed to have one is now going – he's going to be very, very good at making sure if you don't deserve one, you're not getting one.
Representative Cushing, what do you think? We talked about this in the legislature a couple years ago.
Right. Well, you know, at the outset, you know, I'm concerned about stigmatizing people with mental illness.
Well,
I want to make sure that
that's what advocates for people with mental illness have said.
And that having been said, it's clearly that I'm glad that Bob and I agree that in this instance that the system failed and that the person in Manchester should not have, you know, had mental illness and should not have a gun. And that's what we're trying to talk about. We're trying to figure out a way to prevent those people who manifestly have, you know, mental health issues that are such that they're a threat either themselves or others from getting easy access to a firearm.
Well, you just put yourself in the position of these, you know, the families of these victims at Virginia Tech.
Absolutely.
And Colorado. And you just, you know, it's so I don't even know what the word is to hear that, you know, people clearly had psychiatric issues and still they were allowed to buy this gun. So
what we need to ask in New Hampshire is why are there only two people who are on the list who have, you know, have a mental illness such as they constitute a threat to others that's been part of the experience.
Chief Shigori, go ahead.
And that's part of the problem with, like, expanding SB-12 to uncover more people.
SB-12, again, is concealed carry.
I don't have access to those records. So when I make a determination on a license, I only have NICS, III, and what criminal
record? III?
Interstate Identification Index. It's basically a name search through all the states that contribute to that. And then what you do is it says, okay, this person may have a criminal record in Colorado. Then you have, then they have to contact Colorado, and Colorado has to come back with the records. We don't have access to that. In fact, when it was proposed a couple of years ago to have a process where these people would be put onto the list, reported to the FBI for Nick's inclusion, and also have a process to get off, it was opposed. I'm sure Representative Hull could explain better than I why he opposed that.
I remember Senator Waters' bill, I think.
And it was a perfect example was Virginia. When Cho bought those guns, he was able to pass the background checks. And when it came, after that got exposed, Virginia said, wait a minute, we're doing this wrong. We need to start reporting it. And now they do report them.
Go ahead, President Paul.
So the issue is, and even Chief Shigori mentioned this, right? There is no way to get off the list right now. That's part of the problem, is this is a one-way door into the system. So you may have somebody who had an IEA, right, an involuntary admission, but they haven't been adjudicated as mentally incompetent or mentally unhealthy or whatever the correct political term is right now. They may be getting better, right? They may have had PTSD and came back from serving the country and recently found out their girlfriend that they had when they left is no longer with them and just really upset about themselves, potentially suicidal in nature. That's not a good place to be for a little while, but they may get – I mean, they may recover emotionally and be prepared. They shouldn't be denied their rights for the rest of their life. And that's part of the issue, is until we resolve this – you only go into the system and you can never get out. What we do by leaving that policy in place is we discourage people from actually seeking the help they need. And that's a bad idea.
Well, I do wonder about that, Representative Cushing. That's what came up when this bill was discussed a couple of years ago, the idea that if I know that my gun is going to be taken away from me, I won't seek the help that maybe I need for this particular episode.
You know, and I understand the need to have a way that people can get healed and get off the list. I think that there's a there's places where we can find common ground on this. I also agree, as Senator Clegg said earlier, that it is absurd that someone who has medical marijuana per se should not be considered qualified to have a firearm. That doesn't make any sense. These are kind of common sense things. But going back to the example with the failure of the system in Manchester to prevent that individual from obtaining a gun. That doesn't mean because the system failed that we should do away with the system itself, that we should not have that kind of screening.
So we have a process right now, and the statutes at the federal level are adjudicated mentally incompetent or mentally defective, right? Which means a court has determined this. It's not just through a guardianship or a number of other means that someone may in fact lose their rights under some of the proposed legislation. The standard is you went through a courtroom. And if we're going to follow that process—
Is that too high a standard?
I'm not saying it's too high a standard. I'm saying we should follow that standard if we're going to do this. And the problem is right now we have a lot of other processes. Senate Bill 244 would have in fact included other things to put you on the next list.
That's the, again, the—
Yes, the proposed bill from a couple of years ago that
was
defeated.
Sure. Okay, real quick, Chief Shigori, and then lots of callers.
As I recall, Senator Waters' bill, it required that they be committed for 10 days. And in order to get committed for 10 days, you would have had that opportunity to be in probate court with a court-appointed attorney before a judge, and you would be adjudicated. And there was a process to get off the list as part of that bill, too.
Let's go back to our listeners in Moultonboro. Ned is on the air. Hi, Ned. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hey. Thank you.
Sure.
It seems like we've had a lot of shots that are missing the 10 ring here. And what I'm referring to is the idea of licensing. And we do it with our motor vehicles. We get a motorcycle license or a car license or a commercial license. And each of those things has a vetting process and some training that goes along with it. And it seems like that would be a process that could be applied to a gun ownership where there was an opportunity to vet and quantify these people as whether or not they are fit to carry a gun. And I thought that that might be worth mentioning.
Okay. Well, Ned, thank you for the call. What do you think, Bob Clegg?
I drove up here today, and there was at least 10 drivers that were obviously not qualified to drive vehicles. Listen, the whole thing, and I'd like to get back to what Chief Shigori said. I was on his side on that bill that David Waters had until I realized that no matter what the state did, once they were on the NICS list, no state judge could get them off. Only federal judge could get them off. So what we need to do is we need to fix the system so that people, when they have a problem and they are suddenly prohibited, have a way of getting back their rights when they're fine. As one person came in and testified, and he had his psychiatrist behind him saying, look, this guy's fine. He had a real serious issue in family life, and but our law in the state couldn't fix it. So most of us are not ready to send somebody to a list and have them sit there forever.
Is this an area of common ground, guys, this list and who should be on? And, you know, if someone, again, is having psychological problems as serious as in Colorado and Virginia Tech, I mean, absolutely. is that an area where we could find some agreement?
I would hope we would all agree that people who have a demonstrated propensity toward violence would be prohibited from having firearms.
I think the issue is that I see that we have to have – this has to be more than a one-way door. And until that's fixed, and I believe that's going to take some changes at the federal level, going forward is a bad idea, because you may have somebody who for a short period of time is facing a strong emotional difficulty and they may be suicidal. So then we take away their rights forever. That seems like an unfair consequence.
Well, Chief Shigori said there was a way to get off, though. He said there was a, you know, in the previous bill, there was a way to get on and get off.
I believe there's going to need to be changes at the federal level to support some of this. And that's part of the issue. Yes.
Okay. Chief Shigori, and then
it seems like every other state, almost every other state is able to address this. I don't know why New Hampshire can't. We're one of five states with less than 10 people reported. And of those states, two of them have passed Fix NICS, so they're looking at addressing those issues. So if 40 other states can fix this, I don't see why New Hampshire can't.
And I think this points to the need for New Hampshire to close the, you know, background check, the loophole for gun shows, that we need to make sure that people who, you know, are a threat to others don't have easy access to firearms.
Well, that's another huge, huge issue that we won't have time. We've devoted several shows to that topic. But go ahead, Bob Clegg. Let's just remind people
quick,
of what we're talking about here.
I just want to bring up the fact that 40 other states may have something in their state law, but there are, I think, 28 states who have decided that marijuana is legal. And the federal government says, we really don't care what you think. It's not legal. So the Fix NICS problem, because it's a federal NICS and the federal government says once it's on our list, you have to come see us, those state laws don't work, don't get you off the list. And that's the problem we have in New Hampshire.
What about Representative Cushing just raised, Bob Clegg, the idea that New Hampshire should change what's often called the gun show loophole, where if I come buy a gun from a licensed firearms dealer at the shop down the street, you know, I go through this long process and fill out the forms, but if I buy it on the internet, you know, who knows?
You can't buy a gun on the internet.
I can't.
Listen, if I'm going to buy a gun illegally, I can go to Boston, I can go to Lowell, Lawrence, whatever. But when I go to a gun show, most of those people are dealers, and not only that, nobody's going to take the responsibility of selling you a gun and not knowing you. Now, if you want to buy a gun from somebody and they're not quite sure who you are, but you have references, if you have a concealed carry license, they will typically take that as identification that you've been deemed somebody that was legitimately able to carry a gun. But I've been to I don't know how many gun shows, and I've never had somebody say, yeah, just give me the cash, you can leave.
So they're more careful than they are often depicted.
In New Hampshire, they
are. In the
are.
Media. Although I got to say, my older son lost his favorite pocket knife. So we were on the internet yesterday looking for, you know, looking at knives, pocket knives.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of guns for sale on the internet. I mean,
well,
I'm not really
only
sure.
A fool would sell it to you without knowing who you are or without running you through a dealer.
Go ahead, Chief Shigori.
Well, it's true that they could look at the license, but that's my concern about expanding the license and not having an opportunity to look at if somebody we don't know who has been mentally adjudicated. So we're going to have to issue them licenses of SB 12 signed, somebody that we know we've taken to the hospital, but we are not a party to the probate. So we don't know.
We don't have that information.
We don't have the information if they meet the federal criteria, which is up there. And he's right. 159.14 does allow a person to rely upon a New Hampshire license. I think one of the issues, though, that comes back to all of why this suitability is an issue is we have about 250 different issuing authorities in this state. So
mayors,
what I use,
police chiefs, all
right,
these different.
Well, every town, right?
Yeah,
every
town. Essentially, every town.
Yep.
Plus the state police, plus sheriffs.
Yep.
So. Like, I send out a letter for references saying, answer back to me if you have any concerns. Other places actually send self-addressed envelopes with a questionnaire to send back.
So different people have different levels of professionalism in this regard.
I think they're all professionals, but I think they have different concerns as to what they need to do to protect themselves. And that's a liability concern. If I sign a license for somebody who's not suitable, there's no protection for the town of Tufton Borough or me from being sued if I missed something on their mental health record, which I don't have access to. Mm. Right now, I can say I've taken them to the hospital for an IEA because they've been dangerous. They've been ranting, hearing voices, maybe shot themselves in the leg in one case. And I could deny it. If this were to SB 12 get signed, I won't be able to do that.
Well, Governor Sununu says he's
going to sign it. But, I mean, I think that's a concern, is I won't be able to have that discretion anymore. Now I'm going to be put in the difficult situation of, do I sign something that I know somebody is dangerous, but I don't know if they meet the necessary criteria because I don't have access to those records? Or do I not sign it and issue it without a signature saying, here you go, but it's not on me? There's no protection. Many states offer the issuing authority protection, but the other part of that is we have 250 issuing authorities. The particular case that Jared talked about was somebody that their references didn't return letters. Well, I don't look at it that way because I handle it differently.
Everybody handles it differently. Paul, go ahead.
Part of that's the process that we see is broken, right? Because the chief from one town is going to have a very different subjective process from the chief from another town. And what we're seeing is in certain cases is particular chiefs have decided that they're going to change the rules a little bit, either asking for additional information on the form or changing the process. I recently was looking at a website from, in this case, Chief Shigori, right? That you have listed on your webpage in Tufton Borough a process that's different than other people, right? Have to come in person to apply, have to come in person to pick it up, asking for prior information, prior employer information that's not on the form. These things are part of what's on.
There's inconsistencies from town to town.
Right? And that's not what the law says. The law says no additional information shall be asked, right? The chief has this form to use. And the state police has been charged with the responsibility to create the form, and that's the form that we should be using.
All right. We got to close it out there. Did you want to jump in super quick?
Just because
there was a point made about your town.
That was based upon the 2009 form. The 2009 form asked for prior employer. So I haven't updated my website since then. Thank you for pointing that out. We'll address that.
Well, speaking of websites and Facebook, this conversation continues online. Facebook. Keep it going. If you didn't get a chance to jump in today, gentlemen, thank you all so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.